Continuing The Unknown Reality by Jane Roberts, A Seth Book, Volume 2. Alright, so this video is just session notes for 712, but they are really good notes and Seth quotes. So, Rob notes on number one here. He says, Jane delivered this material for Seth in the 42nd session for April 8, 1964. So Seth states, quote, "The universe is continually being created, as all universes are, and the appearance of expansion seen by your scientists is distortive for many reasons. Their time measurements based on camouflage or physical information to begin with are almost riotously inadequate and bound to give distortive data, since the universe simply cannot be measured in those terms. The universe was not created at any particular time, but neither is it expanding into nowhere like an inflated balloon that grows forever larger, at least not along the lines now being considered. The expansion is an illusion based, among other things, upon inadequate time measurements and cause and effect theories. And yet, in some matters, the universe could be said to be expanding, but with entirely different connotations than are usually used." End quote by Seth. And then here's another one from the 43rd session. Seth states, quote, "The universe is expanding in the way that a dream does. This, in a most basic manner, is more like the growth of an idea," end quote by Seth. All right, and then Rob notes here as well at the beginning of Appendix 12, which is not ready yet, but when it is, he's saying, "See the longer presentation from the 44th session for Seth's discussion of, quote, the value climate of psychological reality," end quote. The quote unquote medium that spontaneously contains within it all of our camouflage constructions of space, time, growth, and durability. And Rob notes from the 250th session, April 11, 1966, Seth stated, quote, "The atom you see does not grow larger in mass or expand outward in your space. And neither does your universe," end quote. So Rob notes here that Seth's material in those early sessions, given well over a decade ago for the most part, reflected, of course, his reactions to current astronomical theories about the state and fate of our physical camouflage universe. The idea of an infinitely expanding universe with all of its stars ultimately burned out and all life extinct is still the view largely accepted today. It's based on the red shift measurements of some of the supposedly receding galaxies, their apparent brightnesses, the quote missing mass end quote of the universe, and other very technical data. Yet I find it most interesting to note that now some astrophysicists and mathematicians believe our universe may be destined to contract, indeed to collapse in upon itself after all. But again, these ideas aren't based on the kind of thinking Seth espouses, that consciousness comes first and that its creations are continuous, but upon other quite complicated camouflage observations and measurements. One of these is the discovery of at least some of that missing mass, thus indicating that gravitational fields may exist among the galaxies and galactic dusters, strong enough not only to halt the expansion of the universe, but to pull all matter back together again. In scientific terms, it doesn't seem likely that the conflict between the two viewers will ever be resolved, or any decision reached that our universe may be an oscillating one, forever contracting and expanding. There are too many variables in measurement and interpretation, including the difficulties the human mind encounters when it attempts to grasp the enormous spans of time and space involved. All right, session note number 2, Rob states, just as he talks here about the surface nature of our travel in volume 1 of Unknown Reality, Seth had a similar observation to make about our ideas of time. In the 688th session after 1026, Seth states, quote, again, you live on the surface of the moments, with no understanding of the unrecognized and unofficial realities that lie beneath, end quote. And number 3, Rob states, Seth began discussing coordinate points in chapter 5 of Seth Speaks. You can see the 524th session where Seth states, quote, other kinds of consciousness coexist within the same space that your world inhabits. They do not perceive your physical objects, for their reality is composed of a different camouflage structure. This is a general statement, however, for various points of your realities can and do coincide. Points of what you would call double reality, containing great energy potential, where realities merge, end quote by Seth. All right, session note number 4, Rob is saying, for one instance, when Seth discussed our coming attempts at space travel, here's part of the material I quoted from the 40th session. So Seth states, quote, it is very possible that you might end up in what you intended as a space venture, only to discover that you have traveled to another plane or probability. But at first, you will not know the difference, end quote by Seth. And Rob adds, then in the appendix of Seth Speaks, which is also unfortunately not available, someday it will be, if not by me, then by Tim, hopefully. He says, see the transcript of the ESP class session for January 12, 1971. Certain sightings of UFOs, Seth told class members, represented the appearance of visitors from other realities rather than from elsewhere in our own universe. So, in that statement, take note of the word certain sightings of UFOs. My personal opinion on that is that most UFOs are our own. They're our government, black budget programs, stuff like that. But then you're going to have your very rare sighting of a UFO, which I actually freaking saw, you guys. You don't even know. It was crazy. It was just a light, unidentifiable. It was dark, but it was very large. In comparison to a star, it would have been like... oh, geez, I don't know. About the size of my little pinky nail. My little pinky's nail. So it was pretty big up there in the sky, and it was just there. It moved pretty fast, and then poof, just gone. But there was a cloud, and, you know, you can always say that it was like a, I don't know, what do they call them? A lightning ball, something like that. So, I don't know. We'll never know. But it was really neat to see. Oddly enough, that was only like a week ago. But anyways, let's go back to our notes. So, here's an unfortunate note. Number 5, Rob says, but regrettably, it isn't. And what he's referring to is note 5 right here when Seth says, there are always feedbacks between probable systems. A dominant species in one may appear as a bizarre trace species in another. And then Seth said, more will be said about this later in the book. So, Rob stating it is not. But there are other books that have information on this. So session note number 6 is about the beam of energy that Jane sent to the lady in California. And he is just writing that it seemed to be confirmed. There could be many reasons why the receiver would benefit from attempts to give that kind of assistance, though. One of them being the simple knowledge that someone else, the sender, Jane, cared enough to try to help. But we do think that more than just suggestion is involved. So for session note number 7, I'm just going to go down and read you guys this part where it says, a few days after the episode had taken place with the beam, Seth described in this particular session, Jane had another experience with such a beam of energy. This time she lay on her side facing north after we'd retired, for she wanted to send help to a very ill person in a small town in Canada. She felt the transmission go out from her forehead in a straight line toward its destination. She was physically uncomfortable as she lay there on her left side, however, so after a few moments she turned over. The movement shut off the beam. After she'd settled down on her right side, she felt it go out again, but from the back of her head now, and still traveling truly north to its Canadian goal. Very cool. Rob adds, Jane is often aware of her, quote, beam of energy, end quote, or variations of it when she's reaching out to others. There's at least an evocative analogy here with the behavior of neutrinos, Rob is noting here, which are fundamental subatomic, quote-unquote, particles generated by the nuclear reactions in the cores of stars. Neutrinos travel at the speed of light. They have practically no mass, no electric charge, and hardly ever interact with matter. Not only can they pass through the Earth, they can traverse the universe itself without losing much of their energy. Alright, session note number 9 is about Jane's long sound trances, or long sound sessions. Rob notes, these notes deal with Jane's experience in this week's ESP class, October 1974. He notes that he made a verbatim record of her first encounter with slow or long sound in the 612th session, September 1972, just about a year after she'd finished Seth Speaks. And since the material in that session wasn't covered in Personal Reality or Adventures, they're publishing most of it as an appendix for this volume, which I'm going to show you. If you've not already seen it before, it's going to be pretty crazy. He adds, not only will it illuminate these notes, it will also link, if loosely, Seth's reality, Seth 2, and some other quote-unquote rapid effects. So, in a second I'll show you that appendix, but let me continue here first. Rob says, Chapter 2 of Seth Speaks contains two short passages from Seth that I find very reminiscent of Jane's expression of long sound. He says, see session 514, where Seth stated, quote, we can follow a consciousness through all of its forms, for example, and in your terms with the flicker of an eye, end quote. And then, two, Seth states, for we can spend a century as a tree or as an uncomplicated life form in another reality, end quote. And then Rob adds, after Jane had grappled with her reception of some long sound material last night, she spoke a few words for Seth. It was then that they began to glimpse what they call a quote-unquote source of the long material. For Jane had told class that from our physical viewpoint, quote, this is Jane, Seth's true reality had sounded like a mountain, end quote, to her. It had been, quote, that slow, this is Jane, that slow, that massive, that powerful. I slow down like a mountain and I feel trees grow, end quote. Very cool. And then Rob states, by making a strong effort, she speeded up her reception of him so that he came through sounding like the familiar Seth. Thus, she gained new insights into Seth and his home environment. And from that much larger, more encompassing reality, Seth could follow a consciousness in our camouflage world through all of its forms, quote, within the flicker of an eye, end quote. Okay, and then Rob adds, Jane had to renew her very strict control each time she tried to transmit long data, however. I could see that otherwise she'd slide into an extremely slow delivery. That happened often. Then it would take her many minutes to contend with a single syllable. Her tongue worked persistently at the S-A-L, in quotes, soul, in universal, for example. But even so, all that issued from her was an elongated hissing sound based upon the S alone. So, I'm going to give you guys that, I promise. Just give me a sec. And you're going to hear, or you're going to be able to see this long sound. And that part right there will make a little bit more sense if you've never heard about it. He adds, as the evening passed, Jane told class that she'd kept Seth's, quote, true reality, rhythm, speed, end quote, to her left, and she hoped would speak an understandable translation of it, speed it up for our cognition, to her right. Quote, but I, this is Jane, quote, but I keep getting pulled back into a more true expression of Seth's reality, end quote. She could manage only a few words at a time from the Seth we were used to. Okay, so here's the long sound from Appendix 19, the long sound episode. At 10:09, this is Jane, she says, quote, I'm getting the feeling of a whole lot of beings or personalities way behind my head, end quote. Her eyes were open. She was very relaxed, Rob's noting. She smoked a cigarette as we waited for Seth to return. Then after a pause, she says, quote, I'm getting stuff, but I don't know how I'm supposed to give it. Through Seth too, or what? So I'm just waiting, end quote. And then at 10:16, Jane's head was lowering, but I could still see various expressions of puzzlement and inquiry moving across her face. Jane says, quote, I've got that massive feeling again, end quote, referring to Monday night's session. Her massiveness, among other effects, had been very pronounced for her then. She'd felt herself to be truly giant-sized. Now her eyes slit open. 2 minutes later, she spoke through lips that could hardly move. Quote, Jane says, like in my head, this enormous body is out through space, all space as we think of it, end quote. And then 10:20, she says, quote, I can't do it. I don't think I can do it, end quote. She repeated variations of this idea several times. Some of them were less intelligible than others. Quote, she says, I don't understand what I'm getting, and I don't know what to do with it. It doesn't sound logical. I don't know, but I'll try, end quote. 10:22, in a voice quite a bit deeper and stronger than usual, but not as overpowering as I've heard it be on occasion, Jane began to express a series of very, quote unquote, long, drawn-out syllables. I'd expected anything from a whisper to a scream. What follows at first are my phonetic interpretations of the sounds uttered. Her eyes were closed, her head still down. When Jane reads these typed notes, She may not agree with some of my approximations. Now, in a heavy voice, almost grating, this is what Jane said. And I'm not going to attempt to read that. So Rob is literally trying to convert these sounds into letters. And his interpretation is, putting it all together, says, quote, when we speak world form, end quote. Jane's head vibrated quickly from side to side on a small scale, not at all disruptive, as she continued. And that ended up being something like, we come, we are the inner motion, and that's in quotes. And he couldn't decipher the last word. I thought maybe it was sought. But, and then the next ones are, quote, we are the strength in matter, end quote. This is pretty wild stuff right here. And then the last one down here at the bottom says, quote, let me hold this camera still. Quote, willingly forming slower than light particles, this is one aspect of our activities, end quote. And then 10:35, Jane paused briefly, her eyes closed. Suddenly her voice became high-pitched, and at first quite incomprehensible to me because of the rapidity of her speech. The effect was remarkably like that of a tape recording playing too fast, which is really weird because I was just thinking about that. Okay. Anyways, her voice went way up the scale, issuing from stiffly held lips. After a few moments, I began to understand her. Quote, she says, on another level, this is completely unintelligible. At another level, the pieces are completely unintelligible. End quote. If you've never heard this, this is really wild, right? Anyways, he says, she repeated variations of this idea again and again, which gave me time to write down some of them. Her speech was as fast as it could be while remaining at all explicit. Then, at a bit slower rate, she says, quote, all of these are aspects of one reality. Atoms are sound. You do not hear them. End quote. Now, Jane's pace slowed considerably. In the same high voice, she began stressing as separate units many of the syllables of the words she spoke. This was reminiscent of Seth II's method of delivery, yet subjectively I felt differences. This is Rob. Also, Seth II had usually expressed quote-unquote itself in the singular, whereas tonight's material was coming through under the plural, quote-unquote, we, stating, quote, all consciousness has aspects that are activated and expressed in all idioms or realities. This is all we can clearly communicate with you now, end quote. So, there is a lot more that goes with this that needs to go into the official Appendix 19 when I do that. If you have this book and you are like, oh my gosh, I've got to read that again, do it. Definitely do it. Read Appendix 19 right now. Because Tim Hartheart does not have the appendixes in his volumes that he recorded. Alright, so that's all the notes I'm going to read. You guys can read the rest of them if you want to. And, if there's any necessary links, I will obviously put those in the description for you guys. For the Tim Hartheart channel. But I'm sorry if I, was like, oh no, now you guys are like, what? I gotta hear that Appendix 19. Or you could just buy the book if you don't already have it. But eventually I will get to the appendixes. I am so sorry. I can't even imagine not being able to have this book in my hands to read at will.